So we're picking up back in Proverbs, back in the book of wisdom, using our book as a guide here, this Wisdom for Modern Man by Mr. Harkrider, but really getting into the text. And we've had mostly a textual study. We've certainly consulted some other scriptures, using other scriptures to help us define what's going on in some of these Proverbs and maybe to give us examples of biblical characters who kind of epitomize or give example to some of the Proverbs we see. Some people have lived these out. But I want to go back to the beginning. We haven't done this summary slide in a while, so I thought I would throw it in here. Of course, our theme is really to learn how to be wise. We see that ultimately all wisdom is going to come from above if it's heavenly wisdom, if it's wisdom from God. The fear of the Lord ultimately is the beginning of knowledge. But fools despise wisdom and instruction. And this has outlined our study in large part. Because in all of these decisions, in almost all of our Proverbs, we have either an evil and a good choice, or a neutral and a good choice, or a better and a best choice, right? We have these two things that are contrasting. And these shape our decision making. You know, whether we're allowing wisdom to shape our life, as we already talked about, or allowing wisdom to direct us on which paths to walk on and which paths to not walk on, ultimately we have to decide to choose wisdom. We're going to come back and talk about some of those things we did in the first section, and I wanted to hit those again. But we've been in this larger section in the middle, this middle third of the book, maybe a little bit larger than a third, but this idea of what we do in our lives. How do we live out wisdom on a day-to-day basis? We've gotten through the first 18 or so chapters. I grouped 18 and 19 together just from a thematic perspective. But Lord willing, we'll get into a little bit of chapter 20 there. So we have it up there with our rocks too. As these things build on each other. That was my point with that picture. So as we get into the text here, let's begin by starting at verse 8 of chapter 19. He who gets wisdom loves his own soul. He who keeps understanding will find good. Hopefully this is something we know from our study in Proverbs already. But Proverbs does a great job of reminding us of things that we know so that we keep them in the forefront of our minds, so that we keep thinking about it, and so we can meditate on God's wisdom. So hopefully we can get wisdom and get understanding this evening in our study. We've already talked about verse 9. We talked about it last week, this idea of bearing false witness. But picking up verse 10 and 11, I kind of grouped those together in my mind. Seeing the paths of the wise and the foolish. Let's read verses 10 and 11. Luxury is not fitting for a fool, much less for a servant to rule over princes. The discretion of a man makes him slow to anger, and his glory is to overlook a transgression. So first in verse 10, we see that luxury is not fitting for a fool. When I think of a life of luxury, I think about maybe not a whole lot of work going on. Maybe you have a life of rest. You think about the person getting carried on that like chaise lounge type thing and the people are putting grapes in their mouth, right? You know, you have that image in your head. That's what I think about in luxury. That may be different for you, but I had this idea of this life of rest. Maybe when you're not having to do as much work. We can see that that life of rest is not something that's given to the foolish. Back in Proverbs chapter 3, you know, maybe they're not doing anything. Certainly we've seen that foolish people can be slack or they can be lazy and maybe engage in idleness, but they're really not getting the same rest that the wise people do. Verse 23 of Proverbs chapter 3 beginning, "Then you will walk safely in your way and your foot will not stumble. When you lie down, you will not be afraid. Yes, you will lie down and your sleep will be sweet." So even the foolish person, when they're not doing anything, it's not that they get to rest, because their conscience is not at rest. When we're engaged in evil deeds, if we're in active sin, even if we're not doing anything, even if we're sleeping, it's not sweet sleep. It's not conscience-cleared sleep. It's sleep that keeps us up at night. And that's why, one reason, there are many, why luxury is not fit for the fool, back in Proverbs chapter 19. But in contrast, you have this wise man. I think we can say he's wise based on his behavior in verse 11. This person is a person of discretion, And that discretion makes him slow to anger. And in so doing, when you're slow to anger, your glory can be to overlook a transgression. We can become merciful. We can, as we heard on Sunday, we can practice forgiveness, right? We have time to forgive others. We look for opportunities to forgive others. We look for opportunities to bury the hatchet on maybe a contention or maybe a feud we've had going for, whether we've said it out loud or not, maybe for several months or several years even sometimes. We look for opportunities. We become peacemakers. That's what wise people do, and they glory in that. Now, we have to be careful, because anytime we glory in something, it doesn't need to be for our benefit. But I think how the discreet person here, how the wise person can glory in this verse, is we can glory when our example can lead others to Jesus. We can glory in him. And when we behave like God wants us to do, when we glory in, like we see here, overlooking a transgression, we're being an example of what, a much lesser way, but we're being an example of what God does for us. God overlooks our transgression, not because we've earned it, but he's sought peace with us through his Son. And we can be like him in that way when we forgive others, in a much lesser way, but in a similar way. I have up here a passage we've talked about a lot there in James chapter 1. You know, you've got 2 ears, you got 1 mouth passage, right? You need to be slow to speak, slow to anger, quick to hear. And that's key to doing this, is being able to rein in our emotions of the current moment, take a second, and actually seek to settle that contention. Seek to overlook that transgression. Because that may not be our first response. We may be mad. We may be angry. Slow it down. And let's focus on the important things. Focus on what we should be doing. Discretion here made me think of a verse we talked about earlier as well. Proverbs chapter 10 and verse 19. I think discretion in our speech manifests in 2 ways. One, it's saying less and choosing better. And sometimes, we've talked about already, it's not saying at all. Proverbs chapter 10 and verse 19 says, "In the multitude of words, sin is not lacking, but he who restrains his lips is wise." Kind of gets into a numbers problem. The more words we say, the harder they are to control all of them. And there's some wisdom in that. And ultimately, exercising discretion, choosing what we say wisely and judiciously, you know, really picking the right words, not just throwing a whole lot of words out there just to say them, is something that ultimately slows us down from being as mad. We won't let ourselves build up to anger. And it helps when we're trying to overlook transgressions, when we're trying to be forgiving people, if we're not getting so emotional about it. Which, again, all this is easy to say, right? Any thoughts or comments so far? That can certainly be challenging. Yeah, and how forgiving, you know, even seeking to forgive us in the end, right? You know, even legions of angels could have been called even up to the last moment, but that's not the behavior he embodied. And that's great, yeah. Always need to be focused on Jesus with any of this because he perfectly embodies all of it. So verse 12 is more of an acknowledgement of the power of government. The king's wrath is like the roaring of a lion, but his favor is like dew on the grass. We've talked about Romans 13 already, but let's flip over there just by way of reminder. Ultimately, the first part of this chapter at least is about being submissive or subject to the rulers. Verse 2 says, Therefore, whoever resists the authority resists the ordinance of God, and those who resist will bring judgment on themselves. For rulers are not a terror to good works, but to evil. Do you want to be unafraid of the authority? Do what is good, and you will have praise from the same. For he is God's minister to you for good. But if you do evil, be afraid. For he does not bear the sword in vain. For he is God's minister, an avenger to execute wrath on him who practices evil. Government is a real thing. And in some capacity, we see here from Romans, it helps us keep society in line. You know, there's a certain element to government that when it's functioning the way it's supposed to, is supposed to reduce the amount of evil and promote good. Does it function perfectly in that capacity? Absolutely not. It doesn't. But it does majority of the time. And as a general rule, as we talked about in Proverbs, it encourages that type of behavior. So in this next section, we have proper attitude toward faith, is the way Mr. Harkrider has this labeled. And they've got several things lumped in here. Let's begin with verse 13 and 14. A foolish son is the ruin of his father, and the contentions of a wife are a continual dripping. Houses and riches are an inheritance from fathers, but a prudent wife is from the Lord. So we have kind of two different things that are grouped together here, I think, in this kind of couplet of a proverb. We see, one, the father and the son, and we'll come back to that. But there's this instruction, and I think there's an implied instruction to wives here. You see in verse 13, the contentions of a wife are a continual dripping. I think of a continual dripping as just something you can't quite find it. You know it's in your house somewhere, and you hear that dripping sound, but you can't find it. Where is it? And how bothersome that can be, that's what it says here. You know, we can be contentious with one another. This is certainly not just limited to the spousal relationship, and it's certainly not just limited to wives, but it's talked about here, and in the negative. We have talked about on Sunday, you know, that ultimate chapter of love in Proverbs chapter 13, or excuse me, 1 Corinthians chapter 13, where love is not provoked. And ultimately, when we're contentious, usually we've been provoked to that behavior. We have to be careful about being provoked to contentiousness. But instead, to strive for prudence. Verse 14, but a prudent wife is from the Lord. Something for us to be thankful for. Those of us who have a prudent wife, be grateful to God for that. Tell him how thankful you are for that. Because it is a blessing. And it says here that it's a blessing. Prudence is different than being contentious in all the ways we've just talked about already. Contentiousness is a decision, ultimately, a decision to be provoked, whereas prudence is a decision to overlook transgressions, to make efforts to bury the hatchet, to look for peace. Any comments on that? Kind of grouped in here with it, though, is we have this, the effects, I have this labeled either way, as the effects that children can have on parents. A foolish son is the ruin of his father, verse 13. Verses in verse 14, houses and riches are an inheritance from fathers. Well, if you're the type of son in verse 13, you're not going to be the type of son in verse 14. If you're a foolish son that causes the ruin of his father, there won't be houses and riches that'll be left for an inheritance. And we can see that in examples we know of. We can see that in some of biblical characters, how the throne or how their houses or riches were affected by the children they had who either engaged in idolatry or just engaged in disobedience. But that's certainly something we as children, those of us who still have our parents with us, we can affect their lives. We need to be conscious of that. A bit of a preview, it's a flip of what we'll talk about in Proverbs chapter 22. You know, you think about training up a child, that's what the parent's effect is on the child. But the reverse is also true, maybe to not a great of extent, but we have an effect on our parents. Our decisions affect them. In this next section, titled Work Hard and Be Generous, and it's got elements of both. Verse 15 says, laziness casts one into a deep sleep, and an idle person will suffer hunger. He who keeps the commandment keeps his soul, but he who is careless of his ways will die. He who has pity on the poor lends to the Lord, and he will pay back what he has given. So ultimately, we don't need to be hungry because we're idle and because we're lazy. And of course, this is talking about physical hungerness. We see that this laziness, through the laziness of this person in verse 15, falls into a deep sleep. It's not that they are sleeping from a hard day's work. They're sleeping because they'd rather do that than go to work. And we see that ultimately this will result in not having physical means, right? It's pretty easy to follow the train of thought here. If you don't work, then you won't eat. It's exactly what we see in 2 Thessalonians as a principle the church was supposed to exercise. So it's a true principle. But what are we supposed to hunger for? Well, Matthew chapter 5 would say we need to hunger for righteousness. We've been to the Beatitudes several times. We need to hunger and thirst for what God would have us to seek. His wisdom, his knowledge. And we've talked a little bit about it already, but there's this contrast between carefree living and worry-free living. We talked about it when we were talking about the luxury not being fitting for the fool, but when we keep the commandment, we keep our soul. It's not that we've earned anything, but it's a promise from God. We're accepting the promise of God when we engage in that behavior. And on the contrary, if we're careless of our ways, we say, well, I don't care what God has to say. Or maybe I just don't want to hear what God has to say. Then ultimately, that's going to end up in trouble here, but ultimately trouble to come. We see here that we're able, in 1 Peter 5 and Matthew chapter 11, we're able to live anxiety-free if we're able to cast all our cares on Him. His burden will be light for us. Not that this life will be easy, but He's going to take care of the worry for us. Any comments on that part there? But ultimately, we talked about it in Proverbs, kind of mentioned the Proverbs chapter 22 and verse 6, but there is a correct way to bring up children. And as a general rule, if you bring up children the correct way, maybe we'll have a better relationship from child to parent later on as well. But verse 18 says, chasten your son or discipline your son while there is hope, and do not set your heart on his destruction. Literally there, and because of Old Testament passages that instruction given to the nation of Israel, I think we could also translate this, and do not set your heart on his destruction. The literal words are to put him to death, my Bible says. So there were consequences for being disobedient to parents later in life in the Old Testament. But I think the principle we need to take away from this is, one, we need to discipline our children. You know, there needs to be some chastening that occurs. There needs to be some establishment of what is right and wrong in order to build, one, a respect for authority, but two, a respect for morality. To know that there are good things and there are bad things, and there are things we need to listen to and hear, and that there are consequences for wrong action. But most of us in here are of the age that we're either parents or grandparents or thinking about being parents. If we're thinking about how we chasten them, where is our heart? What do I feel when I'm administering this chastening? When I'm doing discipline, how do I feel on the inside? Is my heart set on their destruction? Or am I doing it out of love? Am I doing it the way God does? Am I doing it because I care about them? That's hard. And what it takes is what we've already talked about. It all comes back to this, too. It's slowing down, being slow to anger, and considering them, right? Thinking about the other person. Not thinking of, man, I can't believe they did that. They did that again. Look at them do that. I got to do something about this. well, do I have to do it for me? Or do I have to do it for them?
Well, it's both. That'd be a good, better answer, right?
But just a heart check there on us as we're parenting our children. I think we do, in large part, do a great job here. Proverbs can step on our toes in all kinds of ways. I didn't mention it there. Ephesians chapter 6 and verse 4, of course, is talking to fathers there specifically, but not to provoke your children to wrath. And ultimately, the best kind of discipline is going to do that. It's going to be administered. It's going to be effective. But it's not going to make them want to retaliate, right? It's going to be done out of love. Any thoughts or comments there before we move on?
I kind of look at that passage where you have a certain amount of time to discipline your children, and then that time's going to be over. And if you haven't disciplined your children, they'll grow up to destruction. So if by withholding discipline, you destroy your children. And I think we see that a lot today. With young people, parents can't get off the phone long enough to train their children, and their children grow up any way they want to.
Yeah, there are ultimate consequences to not administering that discipline, right? I think that's a great way to see that passage, yeah. And that's a way we can be different in the church. I mean, that's a way people can see us differently, is how we raise our children, how we administer discipline appropriately. And there's a broader lesson in that too. You know, if you think about, you have that negative parental experience, you know, in your life. Let's say this person who's not disciplining their child, you're talking about their father wearing them out and then them not wanting to administer discipline. We got to be careful to be reactionary. You know, that's a good example of that, right? If we see one thing this way, we can't just swing to the opposite extreme and think it's right. Sometimes there's some discretion there, right? And discernment in airing what's correct. Yeah, that's right. Yeah, that's good. And you can see some consequences there too. To some would say, you know, inadequate discipline, you know, what went on with his children, and how that manifested later on, and really the development of Absalom's character. Absalom had a lot of things to be angry about because of the discipline David wasn't doing, you know. So this ties right in with it. Verse 19 says, a man of great wrath will suffer punishment, for if you rescue him, you'll have to do it again. I think this lends back into how hard it is to control our temper. We see that this controlling your temper, if you have to rescue him, you'll have to do it again. Unfortunately, impulsive behavior, it can become habitual. It can become a pattern. And we have to resist the urge to expect it in other people, but we have to be able to recognize it in ourselves. One, you know, you have to be able to ask for help for that and know what to pray about, where you're struggling. Proverbs chapter 14 talks about this type of impulsive behavior. Back in verse 29, it says, he who is slow to wrath has great understanding. Well, there's the opposite of that, right? We have great understanding if we're able to slow down. But he who is impulsive exalts folly. Now, we could talk about being impulsive in discipline, certainly what we just talked about. But this impulsive behavior, if we're acting on impulse, that's how we fall into these traps again, right? That's how when someone rescues us, they'll have to do it again, because we still haven't learned from it, right? We haven't gained understanding. We're still just acting on instinct. We're acting on impulse. And ultimately, we're not listening to advice. Verse 20, listen to counsel and receive instruction, that you may be wise in your latter days. I think we talked about it several weeks ago, but it's not the birthdays that give you wisdom on this earth, right? It's not just the experiences. It's what you learn from your experiences. We have a lot of valuable wisdom here, and I think a lot of people who've learned a lot of valuable things, but it's not because the year rolled around and they got another birthday and that's where their wisdom came from. It's because they learned from it, right? They're able to take away practical lessons from that. We see that in verse 21. There are many plans in a man's heart. Nevertheless, the Lord's counsel, that will stand. And ultimately, that should be the source of our advice. God needs to be our final source on wisdom. Proverbs chapter 8 is that great chapter where God's wisdom is talking to us directly and saying things about themselves. We see here, we need to hear God's wisdom. We need to seek it. We know it can be found. But ultimately, that's going to lead us to success. Verse 22 says, what is desired in a man is kindness, and a poor man is far better than a liar. This verse has something we've seen before. It's a de-emphasis on material wealth as an end to be focused on for the wise person. But kindness is something we should be focused on. Obviously, we need to be honest. But our behavior is more important than our wealth status. That's going to define who we are more than how much money we have.
Parable of the rich man and Lazarus.
Yeah, that applies perfectly there, doesn't it?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. And we see their end, right? Let's do verse 23 and verse 24 together here. The fear of the Lord leads to life, and he who has it will abide in satisfaction. He will not be visited with evil. A lazy man buries his hand in the bowl and will not so much as bring it to his mouth again. So abiding in satisfaction, I think for the person, the God-fearer, the person who fears the Lord, that life of insatisfaction is governed by contentment. You know, it may not be a life of luxury, like we talked about the fool not having earlier, but we see that ultimately he won't be visited with evil. He'll be satisfied in his state. We can be content, as Paul was in Philippians chapter 4. The lazy person is going to continue to be lazy. He's not going to strive toward the goal. He's not even going to be able to bring his hand back up again out of the bowl. Some very pictured examples here from Proverbs, right? Even in eating, he's burying his hand in the bowl. He can't even bring it back up. I think Preston talked about this on Sunday night, but that great passage in Philippians chapter 3, we've got to press on. We can't be lazy in our pursuit of wisdom. We can't be lazy in our pursuit of righteousness. It takes effort. Effort is required. It's not going to be something we can't do anything with. And the grace of God demands our all. It demands our sacrifice. And a sacrifice of ourselves isn't something that's easy. Verse 25 through 27, strike a scoffer and the simple will become wary. Rebuke one who has understanding and he will discern knowledge. He who mistreats his father and chases away his mother is a son who brings shame and brings reproach. Cease listening to instruction, my son, and you will stray from the words of knowledge. We've talked about some of these principles already. My overarching theme was, you know, how do we look at God's discipline? How do we see God's word? You know, we know the things that it's profitable for from 2 Timothy chapter 3. You know, reproof, correction, instruction in righteousness. Those are all things that take us humbling ourselves. And if we're listening to God and we're listening to his instruction, we're doing what we should be doing and not what it says here in verse 27, we're going to get the words of knowledge, and ultimately we'll be built up. In verse 25, that rebuke will be profitable for us. We'll be able to discern knowledge. And we see the sad state here of a person who, like we talked about earlier, is having a negative effect, bringing shame on his family because of the way he treats his parents. And then finally, there will be consequences to our behavior. A disreputable witness scorns justice, verse 28, and the mouth of the wicked devours iniquity. Judgments are prepared for scoffers and beatings for the back of fools. We see here the disreputable witness, they don't care about what's right, and they're looking to devour iniquity. They're looking to talk about things that aren't proper, that aren't right. But ultimately, there will be judgment. Judgment's prepared for scoffers. We have a judgment coming in this life as well. May not be a judgment here for all of the scoffers, but ultimately the judgment is coming. Hebrews chapter 9, verse 27. Succinctly put there. As it is appointed for man to die once, but after this the judgment. And humbling still is 1 Peter 4, verses 17 through 19. For the time has come for judgment to begin at the house of God. And if it begins with us first, what will be of those who do not obey the gospel of God? Now, if the righteous one is scarcely saved, where will the ungodly and the sinner appear? Therefore, let those who suffer according to the will of God commit their souls to him in doing good as a faithful creator. This certainly speaks ominously of a judgment to come, but the answer for us is in verse 19. Commit our souls to the Lord. That's where our confidence is. And in committing our souls to him, we're going to be doing good. We're not going to be the lazy and slothful person we've seen thus far in Proverbs chapter 19. Any thoughts and comments there on Proverbs 19 before we move on? So I mentioned it already. We had that section of our book in the section of Proverbs where we talked about avoiding those foolish paths in Proverbs chapter 5 through 7. Primarily, it's talking about adultery in those verses. You know, we have that in Proverbs chapter 5. We have it in Proverbs chapter 7 a lot. We also have, you know, discussing about getting into business promises, co-signing loans. We have some discussion there about several topics, but it's really the list of sinful practices comes in Proverbs chapter 6. I think this is a familiar list to us. I didn't spend a lot of time here when we first encountered it. Verse 16 says, "These six things the Lord hates, yes, seven are an abomination to him. A proud look, a lying tongue, hands that shed innocent blood, a heart that devises wicked plans, feet that are swift in running to evil, a false witness who speaks lies, and one who sows discord among brethren." To me, this is up there with those lists of sinful or behavior that leads to bad, or excuse me, well, lists of bad behavior in the Bible. You think about the works of unrighteousness. You know, you got like 1 Corinthians chapter 6 or Galatians 5 or Colossians 3. Those certainly, I think, would be grouped in with a passage like this. And the reason I bring it up is because of what I've titled Proverbs chapter 20. Forgo destructive vices. It's adapted from what Mr. Harkrider has here. But ultimately, we have to avoid the foolish paths here. There are a lot of behaviors in Proverbs chapter 20 that we need to stay away from, just like we did in Proverbs chapter 5 through 7. The first one is a life of drinking in verse 1. Let's go back and read that first verse of Proverbs chapter 20. "Wine is a mocker, strong drink is a brawler, and whoever is led astray by it is not wise." Some versions will even say, "and whoever is led astray by it will not become wise." So either way you look at that, either it's an indication of your character that you're so caught up in drinking that you're not wise, one. But I think even more condemning is that you will not become wise. People in this lifestyle, these people who are drunkards, who are mocked, or who are mocked by wine, essentially, they may be so self-deceived they don't get out of it, right? They won't even be able to become wise. They can get so caught up in addiction, so caught up in this pursuit. But then, too, we can get caught up in other things, like civil rebellion. I've got these verses grouped together, and we will cover them all, Lord willing, but I'm going to split them apart just a little bit. Verse 2 says, "The wrath of a king is like the roaring of a lion. Whoever promotes him to anger sins against his own life." We've talked about the consequences of government a little bit already. Verse 8 says, "A king who sits on the throne of judgment scatters all evil with his eyes." Verse 26, "A wise king sifts out the wicked and brings the threshing wheel over them." There's some serious consequences for a civil rebellion, for rebelling against government. But in general, feuding as well, and being quarrelsome. Verse 3, "It is honorable for a man to stop striving, since any fool can start a quarrel." Makes me think about with what we started tonight. You know, it's the glory of a discreet man to overlook a transgression. Also harkens back to what we talked about in Proverbs chapter 17 and 18. Verse 14 says, "The beginning of strife," of chapter 17, "is like releasing water. Therefore, stop contention before quarrel starts." Chapter 18 and verse 6, "A fool's lips enter into contention, and his mouth calls for blows." We can't be people who are about starting fights. We can't be a violent people. We got to avoid that path. We got to be people who aren't slack, right? Who aren't people who loiter about. The verse there I want to hit on is 2 Peter chapter 3, 9. It's important to know that God is long-suffering toward us, but he's not slack toward us. It's not that he's idle. God wants us to come to repentance. Thank you for your attention, and we'll pick up there on Sunday morning, Lord willing.